all, thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio, where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It's Thursday, which means the professor is in. It is office hours with Professor John Shelton. And of course, Aaron Zommer's on the ones and twos. Gentlemen, how are we doing this afternoon?
I'm doing incredible. It's great. For listeners out there, Will and I got the chance to meet in person last weekend, which was great. Will is not as tall as I thought he would be. In person.
I get that a lot, John. I get that a lot.
But you're about the same height as me. So I'm one of those people too, that a lot of folks think that I'm a little bit taller in person and they're disappointed in me. Not that I'm
short
disappointed.
Short Kings unite, John. Short
that's
Kings
right,
unite.
That's right. But it was good to hang out with you, man. It was good to see you in person.
You know, I don't know how tall people think I am. How tall do you think I am?
6'6".
Well, I'm 6'2". So
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just always guess my height. I just assume that, which I'm pretty sure is like the world average, John. Like, we're not like, we're short by American standards, but I'm pretty sure the world average is right about, you know, the 5'8", 5'9".
That's
nine,
right.
So.
There's a lot of countries we might be pretty good in terms of height in.
It's just, you know, here in America, we are a little bit on the short end, but that's all right because us short kings, we stick together. And John, you had a much better week with your fantasy flyer / labor lock of the week. Jerry Jeudy dropping a 14.1 spot in full PPR, much better than the Breece Hall pick previously. You did outperform Luke's pick of Jake Ferguson, but I got to give myself a shout out. Travis Etienne at 19.8 did top the week again. So maybe this is the avenue that I need to start focusing on. Forget headlines of the week because I've been struggling there a little bit lately. But
yeah,
I'm
sure your producers would love it if you just talked about fantasy football the whole time. But yeah, that garbage time Jerry Jeudy stuff really helped my pick look good. I mean, they got just the Broncos got absolutely pasted. But hey, I'll take it.
You picked the right game, at least. Might have just been on the wrong side of it. And we'll get to our labor lock and fantasy flyers of the week. But first, we got Professor Shelton here for office hours. If you have a question for the professor, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call. You can text. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media. It's free and easy to download. And Professor, the first part of the conversation I would like to have with you today is, of course, regarding the second GOP debate that occurred last night. I know you had a chance to read up on it after the fact. What are your thoughts on this? I like your use of the term clown car to describe it, because this has been nothing short of a circus.
Yeah, so my first thought, you know, when you texted me about this last night, Will, to talk about this today, was there's a debate tonight. I totally forgot because it's such unintriguing stuff, right? I mean, number one, Trump isn't there. This is still the party of Trump. And, you know, these other candidates are just embarrassingly bad. I mean, almost to a person. You know, a lot of the analysis I read afterwards said, I don't know, Nikki Haley did pretty well and seems somewhat competent, but it's like, you know, you're picking out like the one person who's like semi-competent from what seemed like an utter debacle. And I'm from everything I've read and heard about it, I'm kind of glad I didn't watch. I mean, didn't Chris Christie, he called Trump Donald Duck. I mean, what the heck was going on there? I mean, I think this is the moment in American politics when it's like tragedy followed by farce, right? We're in the farce stage right now, if you look at what's happening in that party. And you know, the truly, you know, just distressing thing is, as bad as those people are, the dude who is like the front runner, Donald Trump, is, you know, on trial and you know, in how many different places. And he seems unbeatable in that party. I mean, it's like, you know, so many of the Republican primary voters are just, I don't know what the word is, deranged. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, like the fact that any of those people could be a major party representative just makes no logical sense.
Yeah, I did unfortunately watch the debate. Perhaps I'm a glutton for punishment. I don't know. But it was, I found it actually quite entertaining, and I'm frustrated with myself for having found it entertaining.
Yeah, same here.
It's, you know, it's in a weird way, you know, we've kind of commodified American politics. Electoral representation has now become entertainment in and of itself. And this really pushes the whole tribal politics narrative that we love to have conversations about.
Wait, so,
you know, my team versus your team. And I found it funny. I genuinely found these conversations funny. But that's also because it's easier to look at the kind of ridiculous things being done and said and laugh at it. I would rather do that than cry, realizing that these people are applying to be the leader of the free world.
Yeah, so you just made me think of this. Did anybody at any point say Brando has the stuff that plants crave? Do you know that line?
it's a commercial, isn't it?
It's from the Mike Judge film Idiocracy.
Oh, I should have got that.
Brando,
I love Idiocracy. Yeah.
It's like it just seems like to a certain extent we're headed in that direction if we're not already there, right? We're just the utter complete degeneration of rational, you know, political argument.
Mm-hmm. And we see this on Capitol Hill all the time, right? Individual senators in particular, I have one in mind that I think is phenomenal at it. And I'll just name drop him because, you know, we're here and we're giving the analysis. Ted Cruz does this a lot where he goes up and he gives, you know, speeches or presentations or, you know, he'll come on a Fox News segment for his 2 or 3 minute clip. And the entire goal is to have that one sentence soundbite that resonates really, really well with his audience that he can blast on all of his social media platforms after the fact. If he's given a 5 minute speech and then he's able to get his one sentence soundbite that he thinks really pushes whatever narrative he's trying to drive, he's able to then go on the media circuit and talk about this one sentence and how effective and important it was, when in reality, he's just grandstanding. He's just trying to get his WWE moment in the sun. And it feels like this debate had a lot of moments like that. I'm glad you mentioned some of the post coverage you read noting Fox News itself as a loser, because I did watch the debate, but I went back and read analysis afterwards as well to try to see what other people saw. And apparently Fox had to reduce its ad time slot prices by hundreds of thousands of dollars for this debate compared to the first one, because interest was expected to be so low. A very tangible demonstration of Fox's failure to make these debates matter, a failure that mainly stems from Trump making clear yet again that Fox needs him more than he needs them, according to Vox.com. And I thought as well, a lot of the analysis that I've been reading has been considering the moderators as losers for their attempts. And it's even bold to say attempts, because they really did a pretty terrible job of keeping the candidates in line. They were talking over each other nonstop for the entirety of the debate. They had a lot of like direct questions that read more like they were interviewing individual candidates rather than allowing for debate. There was even one point where one of the moderators kind of like chided the candidates for mentioning each other too much, because it means they would get to less questions. And the way I originally approached on the moderators were, yeah, you're trying to essentially maintain a circus. You got clowns all over the stage. How are you going to be able to do this without literally cutting their mics? Perhaps that would have been the better route to take. But again, if Fox was just going for the entertainment, coming from the entertainment perspective, just trying to make as engaging content as possible to draw in viewers, then I guess, yeah, they did their job.
Yeah, they may as well have just gotten some of those like seltzer water bottles and the things when people would jump out of the
clown, dunk
jump
tank? Out of the windows.
Yeah, no.
Okay, sorry.
The things that, you know, the clowns would run around and have people jump out of the like window and try to catch them, and then they would miss. you can remember those.
I had no idea where you were going with that. I was like, I was thinking like the flower on the chest that squirts
that
seltzer water in people's face or something.
Any of that stuff, anything that you would see in your ordinary circus. I mean, yeah, from what I heard, like it was just pretty egregiously bad. And it's interesting because, you know, you think about where political parties have gone. This was at the Reagan the Reagan Library or something, right? That's where it was in California.
Yeah, and they made sure to note to yeah. remind us of that over and over and over again.
And as truly awful as Reagan politics were for the country in the 1980s, I mean, your listeners probably know about some of the stuff, everything from PATCO to, you know, the massive tax breaks for you know the wealthy and cuts to social services. I mean, it was truly an awful 8 years. But Reagan at least had this kind of, he talked about the 11th commandment. The 11th commandment was thou shalt not talk ill about another Republican. And, you know, you think about the party getting into this place where these candidates are literally falling all over each other. You know, didn't Nikki Haley say that Vivek made her feel dumber every time he talked or something? Yes. Like that? I mean, like that is such a far cry from where the Republican Party used to be. And it's just a kind of like, you know, one person against all battle royale. And the sad thing is like, none of them have any chance of winning, you know, that they're going after each other. And the person who's going to win the primary and might very well be running while he's on trial, it wasn't there. I mean, it's kind of pathetic if you think about it.
Well, and there was an excellent point to really highlight that at the end, John, which the one thing I thought the moderators did phenomenally well, and it's ironic based on my previous analysis that I would like this because it is playing up that politics as entertainment. But the last question of the night, they asked all of the candidates if this was, you know, a Survivor type game show, which one of the other candidates would you vote off the stage? Who doesn't belong in the race anymore? I like audibly chuckled and I was like, wow, did they really ask that?
They didn't bring out any roses.
Nope, no roses this time.
Ron DeSantis, who are you giving your rose to?
But then everybody just refused to answer. They're like, no, I respect all my former people, even though I just said that they make me dumber when they talk.
Well, yeah. That was Ron DeSantis. He's the one who gave them the out. He kind of like cut off the question and he was like, no, 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 this is inappropriate. This is inappropriate. We shouldn't be asking this question. I'm like, oh, come on. And then the moderator threw it right back at Ron DeSantis and was like, well then, you know, Governor DeSantis, you're down by 40 points to Donald Trump. What would you do to step up and give yourself a chance to compete in this race? Because the way they originally phrased the question was, with seven of you on the stage here, there's really no room to gain with how large Trump's current lead is. You need other people to drop out. It doesn't appear like anybody is going to drop out. So who should be removed from the race?
They were all thinking Vivek. I don't care what they said. They were all thinking.
Well, Chris Christie started to write something down and it got noticed by one of the moderators. And they're like, Governor Christie, were you writing something down? And I immediately knew what his answer was going to be. He's like, yeah, I guess I'll share it. I'll share it with you. Former President Donald Trump should be off this stage. And I was like, well, Chris is sticking to the message. So we're going to continue this conversation with Professor John Shelton here for Office Hours on Town Call on this Thursday afternoon. If you'd like to ask a question of the professor, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It's Thursday. That means the professor is in. It's office hours with Professor John Shelton. If you have a question for the professor, please give us a call or shoot us a text. We're going to go to the phone lines. We got Gary from Sussex calling in about the debate. Gary, what were your thoughts on the second GOP debate of the 2024 cycle?
I was bored. You know, Nikki Haley, I like her, but I would not want to be married to her. Because if I got in an argument with her, I couldn't get a word in edgewise to defend it. You know, she does talks right over you. Now, I'm a Republican, and I'm going to vote for anybody who's got an R in front of their name, obviously. Now, but, you know, I listen to a lot of Democrats talk about, you know, why isn't Trump there? Why isn't Trump there? Now, if Trump was there, obviously the ratings would go up. But if I was Trump, he's like the champion boxer. Everybody wants to go fight him. He doesn't have to box anybody. It's everybody's trying to work their way up, you know, number two, number one. I'm the number one contender to take on Trump. So I think he has nothing to gain by going on, you know, these 10 debates are going to be going on. So I defend him not going and, you know, sparring with the rest of these people. When it gets down to like one or two left, maybe he should start debating, but not with seven or eight.
You know, Gary, I agree with you 100% there. I've had this conversation with a lot of my conservative friends as well, and they're angry that he's not there. And I have to be the one who says, well, if you were him, would you go? You have a commanding lead. You're going to be under attack from every candidate on that stage, left and right. There is nothing, you phrased it very well, I think, Gary. There is nothing for him to gain by going to these debates, but there is a ton for him to risk losing.
Yeah, and so Gary, oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Gary.
No, I'm just agreeing. I'm okay. Glad that we can agree on something.
Yeah, I wanted to say, Gary, I appreciate you calling in. It's good to hear from a Republican on this. And it is fascinating because Trump's not an incumbent, right? He wishes he was and may very well have tried to overthrow the government to make that happen a couple of years ago. But he's acting like an incumbent. That's very much kind of what's happening here, right? It's almost like there's an open primary, but with an incumbent president. So it's a very interesting dynamic that we haven't seen, I think, in a lot of other presidential nomination processes. But is Gary still on the line? I have a question for him. Yeah, okay. So you mentioned not wanting to marry Nikki Haley, right?
Yeah.
Are there any of the candidates that you would want to marry? Let's see if we can make a love connection.
Oh, wait a minute. My love connection is my wife. I met her at 18 years old. We've been married 50 years. I married the finest woman that walks the face of this earth, and I'll take any of you guys on right now. You tell me where you are. We'll box it out there because I married a winner and I'm very, very lucky. So the point I was making is Nikki Haley, I like her, but I wouldn't want to be married to her. Like I said, you listened to her yesterday going on with Wissaswamy or whatever his name is.
Vivek Ramaswamy. She
didn't give, she didn't take a breath for what, a minute, you know? So, yes, I like to be able to.
I think Tim Scott did that too, though, Gary. It was kind of the three of them were kind of talking over each other for the entirety of the mid. It would have been what, like 9:30 to 9:45? So the second hour of the debate, that second half session where Haley and Tim Scott were kind of going at each other over their records in South Carolina. That was.
Right.
That, I think, was a very poor job by the moderators because you cannot have four or five people talking at the same time. Then DeSantis kept trying to interject by saying, let's talk policy here. Let's talk policy here. Let's talk policy here. And Doug Burgum over from the far corner was yelling about everything going on in North Dakota. There was moments where there was legitimately five or six candidates trying to get a word in edgewise, and the moderators just sat there and took it. I don't understand how they expect to get anything worth discussing. Yeah. Done when you're allowing that to happen.
It was poor. I was bored. I liked the first debate. The second debate was like nothing to me. But I'll say one thing about Nikki Haley. I think that she's a strong candidate, and I think that she would make a really good president. One reason I think that she's going to get a lot of people and a lot of women like her. I was listening to somebody doing some survey afterwards, and they said there's a lot of Democratic women that would actually support her. Now, you know, and I was a little bit surprised on that. And one of the reasons is because she's kind of a moderate. She's not extreme. She's more of a moderate, especially on the abortion issue. And that really hurt. Let me tell you, I am very, 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 very pro-life. Okay, I'm on the extreme side of it, but you know, it killed us during any of the elections, and people just want, you know, they don't want to have abortions at, you know, in the third trimester, and so the fact is, there's got to be, I guess, some room for movement that we can all agree on, because right now, it's very divisive between the Republicans, because their base is basically, you know, get rid of abortions, and I guess it's just not gonna not really going to happen. And another thing, one another point, why in Wisconsin, when they do have the law, our attorney general is not enforcing that law, whether he likes it or not, he doesn't have that choice. He made a vow that he's going to enforce the law, and right now he should be enforcing it. So I can't understand how our top cop is just going out to say, well, no, I'm just going to let you have your abortion. Once it settles, the Supreme Court settles it, okay, then fine. Then whatever the law is. But right now the law is you can't.
Well, I think, Professor Shelton, it seems like you're ready to jump into this, because not wholly accurate, Gary, in this situation.
And like I said, Gary, I appreciate the conversation here. I mean, you know, I think it's prosecutors often have a lot of latitude in terms of what they prosecute. And oftentimes, prosecutors decide not to prosecute things that don't seem like serious threats to public safety, or, you know, don't warrant some kind of, you know, huge come down from the law. Right. I mean, prosecutors have done this in lots of places with, cannabis and other kinds of substances like that are seen as harmless. But I wanted to ask you a question, since you're on here. All right. I was kind of joking around before, but in all seriousness, let's say we're in a world where Trump is not the nominee and not available to you, who is your preferred person right now? I'm just curious.
I like Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, but I think Nikki Haley would do well. And I think that she'd be drawing a lot of those women that hate Trump back and vote Republican. A lot of those women in the second round with Trump that were Republicans just gave up on. And when I voted for Trump originally back in 2016, I held my nose and I asked God to forgive me for what I'm about to do, because I hated Trump. But then I started thinking, he's actually not doing too bad. The economy is doing well. He has a real strong stance on China, bringing, stuff back here. My pocketbook proved it. The economy was doing well up until the pandemic. So I thought he did well, but I didn't like him for the first year at all. I couldn't stand the sight of him, I just did not like him, but I thought he did well for America. I really did. And I think a lot of Democrats can say he did well. They just didn't like him,
I got two more quick questions for you, Gary, and then we'll let you get out of here. The first is, we talked earlier on the show about decorum, particularly with Reagan's 11th Amendment. Thou shalt not. Could you quote it for me again, John?
Thou shalt not speak ill about a fellow Republican.
Speak ill. Yes. I was going to say fight, and I was like, that doesn't sound like something that that an elected official in the 80s would have said. But what are your thoughts then, Gary, on some of the more contentious exchanges on the stage? For example, Nikki Haley, you've spoke positively about her the entire conversation when she said to Vivek Ramaswamy, every time I hear you, I feel a little bit dumber for what you say. Is that acceptable? Do you like that type of rhetoric?
I don't think they should be making personal cuts on their intelligence, but she was talking about YouTube and how YouTube is so bad, and he's using YouTube to go out there and get young people. And she is so
more TikTok, but yes, social media in general, I think, was the point. Yeah.
Yes, I meant TikTok. I was absolutely wrong when I said YouTube. Yeah, TikTok. And, I have TikTok. I very seldom go on it, but she is really against it. And she's really pissed off that he's using that to get, and maybe it's to his advantage, and she doesn't like the fact that that he's doing that, and he got the idea first. I don't know. But I don't like when they start talking. I mean, personally, you can go out there and say, look, I don't like your views on this. I don't like your views on that. But when you talk about being stupid or you look weird or something like that, I hate that when people do that. Like when Trump went out there, and I can't remember her name, Carrie Venus or something like that. The other one that
Carrie
was
Lake?
Running as – No. She's cute. The one that was running in 2016, Caravina or something. Do you remember there's only one female running for president?
The Hewlett-Packard executive, Fiorina was her name, I think.
Yeah, right. He said on national TV during debate, he said, how would you like to look at this face for 4 years? That's when I actually hated that man, when he said that. That was the most disgusting thing that he has ever said. He gets himself in such big trouble with his stupid mouth, you know?
Yeah, I think that behavior is gross.
Better.
Right. Second question for you then, Gary. What are your thoughts on Chris Christie, particularly his attacks on Donald Trump? You know, he looked at the screen directly and said, I want to look at the camera right now and tell you, Donald, I know you're watching. You can't help yourself. I know you're watching. You're not here tonight because of polls and because of your indictments. You're not here tonight, not because of polls and your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on this stage and defending your record. Are you okay with Chris Christie and other Republican candidates attacking Donald Trump?
You know, I would vote independent before I vote for Christie. I cannot stand him. I think that he's a traitor, and I think he's a big mouth. And excuse me for saying that, but I do not like him. I thought he's the situation he did with the bridges and was it New Jersey? He's an idiot. He's just a complete idiot. I do not like him, and I don't think I could vote for him. And if I did, I would just be crying.
And just one more question. In your view, Gary, the Bridgegate thing, that was it, right? Bridgegate is worse than encouraging people to like storm the Capitol?
I listened to that. And he's saying, go out there and let them know how you feel and everything. He said, but do it peacefully. Just like you guys are trying to nail him for going out there and saying to go out and kill or hang Millie's. Okay. The congressman from Arizona that went out there and all he said was, if we were living in a different world, they could go out there and hang him. He did not say to go out and hang Millie's at all. Nothing. He just said, if we were living in a different time, you know, he could get hung. So, you know, I think you guys, not you guys personally, when I say you guys, I'm talking about fellow Democrats, they twist words. And, you know, and if Trump would have went out there and said, go to the Capitol and go out there and bust into the place, he would be in prison. And I wouldn't want to see him again at all. I heard him say, and do it peacefully. So,
we'll have to agree to disagree about that one, Gary.
Oh, thanks for calling, Gary. We very much appreciate the call. I have to note one thing based on what Gary just said. That reminds me of the famous quote, will no one rid me of this turbulent priest, right? The Thomas Beckett quote, basically wishing something would happen to an individual they don't like, but not explicitly asking for it. So we're going to continue this conversation. It's Office Hours with Professor John Shelton. If you have a question for the professor, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All of which are American dreams. All of which are American dreams. All of which are American dreams. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. It's Thursday, and that means the professor is in. It is Office Hours with Professor John Shelton. We are talking last night's Republican debate. We are going to be jumping into a new conversation in 1 second, John, but I wanted to kind of finish up the conversation we had in the last segment. One thing I do want to note as well that we weren't able to kind of get into, but remember, a ruling by the Dane County Circuit Court in July made it clear that the 1849 law is not enforceable for voluntary abortions. So no, Josh Call is not required by law to be following up on this 1849 law. That is actually not the case. And I also wanted to add, as we finish up the conversation regarding last night's GOP debate, I didn't get a chance to kind of fill you in, but when you mentioned the Donald Duck quote from Chris Christie, that was kind of finishing his statement regarding, you know, calling out Donald Trump to the camera when he said, you know, you can't help yourself. I know you're watching. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of defending your record. he went on to say, you're ducking these things, and let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck. So his point was that, you know, you are ducking responsibility and you are ducking accountability, which is a conversation we have on the show frequently, how nobody wants to be held accountable anymore.
Still, somebody should have had that, like, Price is Right sound when somebody loses at Plinko to go right after that Donald Duck line.
I was imagining more like that. That's funny. So jumping into another conversation, John, that I saved specifically for you because I really wanted to hear your thoughts on it. Going back to last Tuesday, President Joe Biden went to Detroit and stood on the picket line with UAW workers. Now, this is the first time in American history that a sitting U.S. president has sided with labor and been on the picket line. You compare that to, for example, Donald Trump, who engineered a news cycle about his support for labor, then went and addressed a non-union auto parts shop. I think it's there was an excellent tweet from Eric Levitz of New York Magazine noting the microcosm of the two parties' approach to courting workers. How Democrats are being forced after sustained pressure, but they did show up. They were on the lines. They were standing there in solidarity with workers while the Republican Party was taking the opportunity to get their photo shoot, act like they're going to support labor. But in reality, you know, they went to a non-union shop and essentially made the right to work argument in front of a bunch of the leaders of these entities. What do you think about a sitting U.S. president making this decision?
Yeah, well, it's a huge moment. And the closest that we've come in the past, in the 1930s, of course, FDR encouraged workers to join unions, as did many in his administration. There's a kind of famous moment when his Secretary of Labor, Francis Perkins, went to Homestead, Pennsylvania. And when the local, because it was a company town, right, a steel town. And when the authorities told her she couldn't speak there, this is a great moment. I love telling this story. The authorities told her she couldn't speak there to workers and tell them about their rights under the National Industrial Relations Act. And she couldn't speak in any public spaces. So she quickly found the closest post office, which at that time was federal property, and essentially said, I'm a federal, a federal administrator. I'm basically using this federal property, and held an impromptu union meeting there. It's a great story. So you have that. Ironically, though, maybe the closest we've come to a president actually on the picket lines was Ronald Reagan, who actually engineered the SAG strike, Screen Actors Guild strike, in 1959-60. He was president. He was the head
of the... Now, is this that same Ronald Reagan whose library had the debate last night, who is now the patron saint of the Republican Party? That's the same individual?
It's all coming full circle. We've reached the singularity, man. But in terms of having a sitting president actually on the picket lines, this is huge. And it's important to note that this isn't just Biden deciding, hey, I'm going to do this. He's gotten a lot of, as you noted, a lot of pressure from the labor movement, from senator, like other Democrats, like Senator Bernie Sanders, who has been on picket lines and encouraged
Bernie
Biden.
Bernie came down to UAW 180 with us last summer down in Racine.
Yep, exactly. And so having a sitting president, it's huge for Biden. I mean, I would have liked to have heard him come out even more forcefully against the greed and the kind of corporate profits, the profiteering that the auto companies have engaged in while not allowing workers to have wages and inflicting a two-tier labor system. But still, that's something that, I'm quibbling a little bit, but just being there and standing with those workers and saying they're right is a huge move, especially for a president who is going to need labor support and the support of working people to get reelected. Big stuff.
I think this is likely going to be a extended conversation for next week's office hours, John, because this needs to be covered. And I want to compare it to, we talked about pressure, particularly amongst the Democratic Party. There was a tweet yesterday from former President Barack Obama noting that Joe Biden knows the importance of unions. That's why he joined the UAW picket line yesterday. Right now, unions across the country continue to stand up and advocate for the rights of the working Americans. You know, just a generic, trying to sound good tweet. And Ryan Grimm of The Intercept pointed out, did it ever occur to Obama to join the picket line? Was that a thought that he even possibly conceived, was it just immediately rejected? And then I found a fun little piece from Where was it? Where was it? Oh, no, now I'm losing it. CBS News from 2011. Liberals calling on Barack Obama to fulfill campaign promises, walk with Wisconsin union protesters, because back in 07, then-Senator Obama said that if he were president, he'd be walking the picket lines in solidarity with workers if unions were ever threatened. He had the chance in Wisconsin, but the White House said President Obama had no such plans. So
I believe this was us pushing him. I believe he said he was going to put on his walking shoes, and then he must have lost those when he got into the White House. It was perplexing.
Yeah, so it's really nice to see the energy behind the movement now forcing these elected officials to get out and put their money where their mouth is. So, John, we got a couple minutes left. We got to jump into our fantasy flyers and labor locks of the week. I saw another hilarious tweet noting Travis Kelce's jersey sales jumping 400% after the Taylor Swift attending of his game. People saying then things after the fact like, Taylor, can you ride Amtrak now? Generate some interest in that. So I'm going to ban you from picking Travis Kelce, but I will let you go first this week.
So first of all, this comes with a caveat that all of my fantasy teams are completely in disarray right now. So none of you should listen to me, but these are here goes. My lock of the week is Tony Pollard, who has been getting huge workload with the Cowboys. Not quite the results that a lot of Pollard owners have wanted, but I think a big week this week. And then my Flyers, Anthony Richardson, quarterback for the Colts. Don't forget about him. If he's healthy, he can run the ball. He can throw the ball. Could put up some big numbers this week.
Good pick. I'm going to go with a... I hate to double dip, but man, that offense has a lot of targets to spare. So I'm going to go with Keenan Allen as my labor lock of the week. He's got the Raiders coming up this week. Their defense has been just beaten to shreds, especially by Davante Adams last week. And for my flyer of the week, I don't know if it's really a flyer, but I really love George Kittle. San Francisco's got injuries all over their offense. Arizona's been notoriously bad against the tight end. And my DFS lineups are likely to feature both of those individuals. So thanks for joining us again for Office Hours today, Professor Shelton. If you'd like to participate in the forum, you know where to find us. Give us a call, shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We'll be back tomorrow with Headlines of the Week. Take it easy, party people.
We'll see you then.
Good weekend.